Before we start, related to the test, since I did not announce it differently, I will just stick to that for this time. Next time, if you all agree, we will just start with the test and then we'll go on with whatever's the plan on the lecture. Okay? So then we can start. So the lecture today will be about organizational aspects. And this is the structure of it. So in order to introduce with something, there is this report, white paper, that has this saying, IT security is broken. And why is that? Because according to some research, it seems that 25%, only 25% of EMEA region, which is like Europe, Middle East, and Africa, Africa. Business leaders are confident about their cybersecurity. And then most of these events, it seems, from another report from Forbes, it seems that half of the data breaches originate within the organization. So most of these events result from the failure to govern the digital identities of the employees and other users. And then the organizations also, it seems like they feel vulnerable to these cyber attacks. So according to the report, again, 45% of the respondents mentioned to have experienced data breaches resulting from user access abuse. And so this report further concludes that info security leaders should see identity governance as enabling digital information at their organizations. Further on, we might also assume that the attack surface is growing bigger every day, and then we have more and more devices connected. There is this other report that says that by 2020 we will have more than 50 billion devices connected worldwide. So that should be something relevant. And then once the attack surface grows, there might be also some, let's say, old school solutions. One of them is the so-called air gapping method or air gapping technique. It's like isolating your main system, your main devices from whatever is around that, and that's like not connecting it to anything, keeping it from safe distance in order to avoid being affected from any electromagnetic fields and so on. And then you have the link there so you can click on it. I'm just trying to move on very fast here. And then according to another research from 2018, it takes on average 197 days to identify a security breach. That's like more than 6 months. So we have a security breach and we know about that only 6 or 7 months after it. So that's a very long time. And then it takes further other 69 days. So it's like two and a half months to contain it. So it's almost 1 year now already. It seems that chasing these types of threats is a losing game. But on the other hand, we also understand that securing a moving target is complicated, because if we would like to, I mean, if the organization would follow this approach that they would change their systems, they would change their approach and so on, so they would be like a moving target, this is also not very convenient at times. So there's even on that option, there is almost 30% chance that you would have another breach in the next 2 years. Well, with all this information, since we're talking about organizational aspects, let's start from the beginning and give some simple definition. So, first of all, organizations. What do we mean by organizations? Actually, as in all other lectures so far, in all other courses and so on, there are different ways to define an organization. And these are mostly categorized into two main ones, which is like the technical definition. And in the technical definition, the organization is seen as a stable, formal social structure which takes resources from the environment and then is able to process them and to produce certain outputs. And when we think about this way of defining the organization, we also are thinking of the primary production factors that the organization uses in order to produce the outputs, which are like capital and labor. And then they are also, according also to the image here, they are also transformed into products or services in the production function and consumed by the environments in order where they will be then able to produce supply inputs further on. So, on the technical side, it seems that organizations are likely more stable than any other informal group, both in terms of longevity, both in terms of the routine tasks involved, and with any other informal group, we might also understand something like some friends going out for the weekend. And then when we talk about organization, we should also understand that these are like formal legal entities, so they are accountable of their own actions. They are also they have also some liabilities and so on. They have internal rules, procedures, and so on. But on the other side, organizations are also social structures. So they have this group of people within them, which is also seen on this other aspect. And so it's just a collection of social elements. And then we should also use another definition to further complement this one, and we use the behavioral definition, which sees the organization as a collection of rights, privileges, obligations, and responsibilities, which are sort of balanced over a period of time, and they are balanced by having these ongoing conflicts and then resolving on these conflicts. So this is like a cyclical process which the organizations go through, and then they just improve their way of acting and progressing further. And also from the behavioral definition, we might understand that the people within the organization will be able to develop, even not from the beginning, but sometimes, a customary way of working, which is like trying to do similar activities, trying to make arrangements with their superiors, with their subordinates, and so on. Between these views, there are certain differences. So from the technical side, we saw that we were focusing on how the inputs are combined in order to produce the output, but then that's also true when there are also other changes in technology, so how this is influencing the whole process. And then on the behavioral side, it's like even if we have a certain technology introduced, it's not that everything will go on as expected, so there should be something else that should define how the organization should adapt to it, and that's how we go with the behavioral definition. But even so, as mentioned before, the technical and the behavioral definitions are not contradictory, they are just complementary to each other.
Here you see some of the features of the organization: business processes, organizational culture and politics, organizational environments, structure, organizational goals, and leadership styles, and so on. You have more in these slides. I will just skip them for now. So the organizations also have different goals. Some of them are trying to make the people understand their mistakes, or force the people into do something which should be like better than something else. That's like coercive goal. Then utilitarian goal or normative goal, where, for example, this is related to, let's say, education institutions and so on. They might serve different groups. They might have different leadership styles depending on the management and how it's organized. And then there might be organizations with routine or non-routine tasks. An important part of the organizational environment is the competitive advantage. By competitive advantage, we understand that there is something that, at least in each of the industries that we are aware of so far, there should be a company which like distinguishes itself from the others. So, for example, if you heard about Toyota or Walmart or Amazon or Google or Apple, etc., there is a reason behind this. And the reason is that these companies have been able to use their resources or their capacities and so on to build this long-term success. And this was entirely based, or at least mainly based, on their competitive advantage. So they might have usually access to a special kind of resources, which like the other companies cannot or do not have. And then they might also be able to use whatever resources are there common for everyone, but just they are able to use it in a more efficient way. So this is how they're using their skills or competencies. And then, of course, whenever there is this organization that has a certain level of competitive advantage on the short term, but then also on the long term, there should be expected a higher revenue growth and also more profitability and more productivity. But how do these organizations achieve the competitive advantage? And how can an organization develop a strategic one? There are these competitive strategies which are known. It might be because they are trying to lower their costs as much as possible. Walmart is an example of it. It might be because they are trying to differentiate their products. Apple is another example. They are trying to focus on a market niche, which is like a specific market, or they are just trying to improve their connections with the suppliers and with the customers, and this is usually done with by using a new technology, a new system, and so on. And then, why are we talking about this competitive advantage here, is that because of a recent research, another report, another white paper, you will have it uploaded further. Cybersecurity seems to be one of the most, let's say, modern era competitive advantages. So it seems like whenever your organization is having a high level of cybersecurity, then this means that it should be well positioned in the market. And this is from a recent survey with a certain target group of respondents from different countries. And they put cybersecurity awareness or cybersecurity level at third place when they were trying to find a good retailer for their own wishes. And you have also the link there. And then further on, if we might understand that cybersecurity is a good competitive advantage, or is a good source of a competitive advantage, we should also talk about the business drivers. So how could information security or cybersecurity be supported, or how we could justify investing in information security or cybersecurity within the organization? And so the business drivers are nothing less than external or internal factors that are driving the organizational strategy and therefore its business and performance needs. So whenever we have something that can help progress further an activity or a strategy, then we have a business driver. In terms of security, there are certain internal drivers and also external ones, such as you might want to invest in information security in terms of improving the personal safety of the employees, the management, and so on, in terms of protecting the internal network and data, because you want to comply with the business objectives, with the business requirements, with the business process needs, and of course because you want to save more costs. And then we'll talk about these savings in the next lecture next week when we talk about risk management. And then on the external driver side, you might want to invest in cybersecurity because you are looking towards minimizing the threat space and also complying with the regulations that are there, like local regulations, international regulations, and so on. Because you would be able to reduce the litigation in terms of something that's affecting your customers or your other stakeholders, comply with the customer needs, comply with the supplier needs, and then both internal and external, you might want to invest in cybersecurity because there will be a certain business opportunity. If not now, it will be at least in the long term, and then of course it's a good source for a competitive advantage. So all these business drivers show that cybersecurity is very relevant for the organizations, and so we need to do something about it. And then we should start from, first of all, from ourselves. So first of all, we should try to protect our own devices. And how do we do that? We should use antivirus or anti-spyware. So we should try to get software from trusted websites, and then we should also try to keep our software updated. We should try to manage our operating system and browser settings as good as possible in terms of security. So we should put the security settings on the computer and browser medium level or higher. We should try to update our operating systems and browsers and then download the latest patches and security updates from the vendors. We should try to keep the firewall on. The firewall is something that's designed to control or filter communications, and then it might be a software or a hardware version. Usually the links there are in case you are using one of these operating systems, and you might see how you can implement the firewall within your devices. And then you should also be aware that you need to protect all the devices. So first of all, they should be password protected. There should be information which should be encrypted, hopefully. And then please keep in mind that you should just store the most necessary information in the mobile devices, because they are being a target a growing target in these recent days. And then on the networks, you should try to use the wireless networks as safely as possible. If there is a preset password, try to change it, if you're able to. And then try to use encrypted wireless communication. Even that, I mean, even if you use this, there was some research in 2017, and it was about the so-called crack attack or crack, which is a security flaw in the WPA2 protocol, which is a wireless protocol for communications. And it seems that it might be exploited, and then it might affect any Wi-Fi network that uses this protocol. But this was just like in order to make all the users aware of it, but I don't think there's something, concrete on the effects of this attack. And then if you could just increase your security level or use something like a VPN or something, it might be good for this. Then some other advices: if you are away from home, do not try to access or send sensitive information on a public network. Use VPN tunnels whenever available or possible. And then try to use file sharing, which is authenticated and encrypted. For the mobile devices, there are always some issues with the Bluetooth protocol. It's also vulnerable to external attackers, and you might think about keeping Bluetooth off as long as you don't use it. Then, since we mentioned passwords, I'm sharing some images first. So I wonder if any of you is using one of these passwords here. I hope so, at least. And then, if you are not using this, then maybe you might use one of these. I would suggest you to change your password if you're using one of these, because along with these other ones, you can see, I mean, who doesn't like superheroes or cartoons or whatever. So you can see there. These are some of the most typical passwords used today. This is recent research. So, and guess what? These are once some of the most used passwords in recent breaches. So it's like year after year, they have this huge database where they store all the leaked passwords from data breaches. And I'm not sure if it's here, but so this is something done from this website, HavaBeenPwned. And according to that, it seems that only for 2019 there have been at least 100 million passwords leaked. And if you're using one of these passwords, your account should have been compromised so far. And the next funny thing is that they have been doing this for the past 5 or 10 years. And if you go through the sources, you will see that from the first year until this year, the top list has never changed. So people that have been using, even if there were breaches and so on, these passwords are still the most used ones. So even if there were problems with these passwords, there are still people using those. Yeah. And so for the passwords, whenever you are trying to choose a good password, you should not use dictionary words. We talked about this, how can the attackers use the attack for this. And then even common misspellings of words might be also dangerous to use. Don't use computer names, account names. Try to use special characters and even maybe a password with 10 or more characters. Unique passwords for each online account. I'm not sure if any of you were present, but there was this Fürschnick Dagen. There was this open lecture from people here in NTNU Yove. And they were from the SOC and the security. I'm not sure now how is the name of it. So they were trying to mention some of their recent work. And it seems like in this university, in this community, there are still people who are not aware of the main security requirements. I mean, we're talking about individuals anyway. So we're talking about a few people who are using the same password since 15 years ago. And then we're talking about people that are like somehow sharing their password in a way or in another way. So yeah. So please try to use unique passwords for each online account that you have. Because if you will use the same password, it's like having access to different houses or different locations, and you have the same key for everything. So it's not a good thing. And then, of course, you can also try to use a password manager. You might also try to use a passphrase rather than a password, and this is also related to one of the labs we will do afterwards. And last thing here for the passwords, you have the guidelines provided from NIST, which is the National Institute of Standards and Technology, US. They have been providing these documents since a while now, and this is like the most recent guideline. And it's a guideline, so you are not required to follow this, but it would be good if you could, and also the organizations could follow this. So, yeah. And then, even if you have a strong password, it's always important if you are able to protect and preserve your data. So how would you protect your data? You should be able to do that by encrypting them. And then, whenever you are ready to encrypt some data, you should do that if you answer to these questions by saying no, then you should do it. So the encryption is a process of converting information into a form where an unauthorized party, a third party, and an outsider, an attacker, is not able to access it. So it would be just the other, let's say, destination system which would be able to read this and access it, and so on. And you can do this with the existing software programs. And then you might also try to back up your data. And this is also in terms when we are talking about organization. So that's why I'm doing this now. And so when you have a backup, this will help you prevent losing irreplaceable data. And then you should also consider to have a backup location for all your data. So when you're doing backup, it's like trying to make a copy of everything that's important to you. Do you have a system that should be running 24 hours, seven days a week? Then you should try to back up some, at least the most important parts of it. Do you have a team that is supposed also to be available different times of days and so on? Then you should also try to have different people used to work on these activities. And yeah. Further, you might also try to delete the data, and then you should also try to remove it, to wipe it away from the recycle bin. But also, then if you are trying to delete the data that are stored online, like on the cloud, you should first try to answer the questions such as, for example, are these data stored somewhere? Can I access them again? Do I have a backup from them or so on? Are they encrypted? And then about the online presence, the most recent way how to protect your online information, your personal information, is by introducing this approach, so-called two-factor authentication. I think we talked about it shortly, but I think we talked about it on the bad side. So it's like we talked about how we can avoid this. Actually, anyway, this is one of the most popular online procedure, and this is being used from more and more companies. You also can notice it from local companies using it, banks and so on. And in this process, there are two steps. The first one is you are required to put your username, password, PIN, or so on. And then the second step, you will receive something like you will need to provide information regarding a physical object or a scan or something else. But then, as I mentioned in the previous lecture, there might still be ways to skip this or to use it or to, let's say, to exploit this by just doing sort of like a SIM swap attack or whatever. And then about the social media, organizations are highly relying on the social media presence these days. So it's very important that whenever there is this social media account, page or whatever, you should be able to share as little information as possible, both on a personal perspective but on also on an organizational perspective. Make sure you just try to share what's important and not try to fall victim to something that's not good. You should not try to use like typical questions like mother's name, birthplace, but I mean, you should not try to use real information on these things, and you will be safer then. And maybe a password manager, email and browser privacy. We might skip it. And you can say here that it's your own responsibility, after all, to safeguard your own data, your own identity, and your own computing devices. And then when we talk further about the organization, we should understand that there are the organizational data which need to be protected. And we're talking about traditional data, which is like personnel information, financial information, intellectual property, and then also we have the so-called Internet of Things now, and the big data. These are some new ways to understand how is the environment around us working, and also how can we make the best use of the data that we have in order to predict what's going on in next year, or in order to have more analysis and more proper decision making. And in order to do and to protect all these things, we should try also to maintain the so-called confidentiality, integrity, and availability. And then further on, we should understand that even if we do this, it's not always, I mentioned before, so it's not always easy and it's not always feasible. So it's not always cheap to do this stuff, and there might be some consequences such as vandalism, ruining of the reputation in the organization, losing the revenues, losing your information, your most important assets, and then maybe some confidential documents and so on. So we might also try to use some more reliable appliances and tools. And since we're here, we should also understand that there is no single best solution. There is no single device that can do anything. But you might try to use a combination of different devices to make sure your system is safe. And you must make sure that they are able to work together, to integrate with each other, and to synchronize everything. So in the organizational level, we are speaking about using routers, firewalls, intrusion prevention systems, virtual private networks, antivirus, anti-malware software, and also other devices. Firewalls, we already talked about this. There are two main categories when we talk about the organization. There is the host-based firewall, which is like used on a single computer, on a single unit, and then there are the network-based firewalls, which are used on the whole network. And then if we want to split them into more details, these are the different types of the firewalls that might be used in a certain organization. And you have the host-based one in the end, so that's like lowest level. There are also some security guys or IT guys which are using this port scanning. What's this? This is like trying to understand if in your own system or in the network there are some ports that are like open to be exploited from outsiders. This is usually done in order to prevent if there's something, some threat coming. But it's also not so safe to do it. So you might want to make sure that you are not putting your organization in further danger if you do this. So that's why I'm not explaining too much stuff here. Anyway, you have a Cisco lab for this. And further on, if we are to understand how this whole thing goes, the process of the attacking side goes further. Some years ago, there was a white paper from Lockheed Martin, something, a strategy or an approach they devised. They wanted to understand how could the attack progress through time. And so they developed the so-called cyber kill chain, which is like composed of different activities that a certain attacker should follow until he is able to perform the last and final action on the system he compromises. So these are the stages, reconnaissance, when you are trying to gather information, and then whenever you are able to do this, then you are starting to weaponize whatever you have, and so you are creating the exploit and the malicious software to do this. Then you deliver it to your target. Then the exploitation time begins, and we are now talking about the compromise stage. Then installation begins when the file is being installed, and so everything
starts there. And then there's this, the final stage, which is the post-compromise, where the attacker will be able to perform anything he wants remotely by just having this malware installed in your system, and then he could do anything further. He could use just your own system and also propagate it further into other systems in the rest of the network. So whenever you are trying to follow this approach, there are some important questions which need to be answered in order to understand at what stage of this approach you are now and how you should react or what you should do about it as an organization. So the first thing to do is to understand what are the certain or, I mean, the most simple attack indicators at each stage of this kill chain, and then how should we detect them? So what should we use? Which security tool should we use to do that? And then further on, if now that we know everything, we should understand if we have any gaps when we are trying to analyze this and we're trying to detect or to be safe from that. And in this whole approach, as the picture I showed you showed also, that we had this arrow that was increasing upwards, it means that there were more costs and more efforts required if we would understand that we and that the organization is now at the higher level of this approach. So if we are in one of those higher levels, higher stages, then we should devote more efforts and, of course, have more budget to overcome this situation. Then in some cases, we also use a behavioral approach, which is like a threat detection form that uses informational context in order to detect the anomalies that are in the network. So we are not using history, we're using whatever we have now, and then we are trying to, I mean, the tools are trying to understand and to classify the situation in terms of the information it has. This is also how honeypots are designed. So they are like behavior-based detection tools, and they are trying to invite a potential attacker into by appealing to his own behavior. So he might be trying to find some information, to find some open ports and so on, and then we offer that to him, and then that's how it starts. In this part of how we should protect the organization, we are also talking about the intrusion detection systems. They are thought to be part of this so-called behavior approach because of the information they use. And then they might be sometimes a dedicated network device or a certain tool, or just a module in another bigger device or a firewall. And they are consistently looking for malicious traffic. The main purpose of the intrusion detection system is just to keep the logs on all access events and then alert the network administrator about something wrong that might happen. So if there is something wrong, they just alert the responsible persons. They don't act based on this, okay? They don't respond or something. That's something another system does. Usually in the intrusion detection system case, the scanning process that goes on and on all the time, it creates some so-called latencies, which maybe can slow down the whole
business activity and so on. So the best solution would be to place these devices offline, so it's like not related to regular network, and then all the data that are in the regular network are just copied and just and then they are analyzed from the IDS. So nothing is working in the same network in the same branch. Then, when we talk about intrusion prevention systems, these are the tools that we can use in order to respond to a certain unauthorized access event. So they are able to block or deny the traffic based on a rule or on a case. They are able to perform real-time traffic and port analysis to detect possible attacks. And then they should also be able to integrate with an IDS system. It might be that both of them are in the same device and so on. Other tools: security information and event management, data loss prevention software. Then there is also another approach which is, looks at these attacks and has these stages defined. These four main stages. This is also something that's highly used today. Everything starts from prevent. So when you are trying to prevent the attacks from being successful, then you go to detecting everything that's new, that's not, that was not there before. And then when you detect them and you, when you have the right information, you can try to respond. And this all this whole process finishes with the predict stage, where because of all the information acquired from these previous stages, you will be now able to predict the attacks, the future attacks. And they, then you will be able to prevent and so on. Then there's this thing about the security playbook, which is like a collection of repeatable reports, logs, queries about any security event that happens within an organization. And it's also a good approach to follow. There are plenty of examples of playbooks used in different organizations and how are they developed and how can they be commercialized. Thinking about the future, I tried this part, I tried in this part to put here a local case. So we have Telenor, which is trying to improve their incident investigation approach and, of course, to improve security. And you will have this short case study in the materials further. Then there are also other organizations or even other agencies or even nations which are trying to build these agencies. Most of the developed nations have something like this, and also other nations. We have the so-called computer security incident response teams, which are able to receive, review, and respond to any security incident report. And then we also have the CERT, and we also have some other agencies and international organizations which are responsible for these activities. And we also have the local case. We have the NorCERT, which is a Norwegian computer emergency response team. And it's part of the NSM, I think. Yes, a part of the national secret have been there. Yeah. This is the link. So to conclude this lecture, it seems that IT investments will increase. Of course they will increase. And this is also because of the research, but also like it should be like that.
70% of the people responding that they expect the investment in IT to increase. And then also on the other hand, another research showed that data breaches will increase. So it seems that more and more they will have a more a growing impact, and it might be that there will be over 100, almost 150 billion records stolen over the next 5 years. This is from another research and paper. I will also try to share it further. And then also whaling will continue. Whaling is like trying to attack the high-level management, right? We talked about this. And what? Why is that? Because it seems that we talked about passwords, and password reuse is the number one cause of harm happening on the internet, and this is also something that's real, and it's recent every time. So we talked in the beginning about the IT security, which is broken. So how do you fix IT security? Well, you might try to build an essential security level into everything that you own, devices and so on. You might try to encourage a collaborative culture, and this was also related to the organizational culture, to the security culture that we have already talked about. And you might also try to invest in the right people. Today we are seeing that more and more positions are having this cybersecurity level approach. So if you're able to know something about cybersecurity, then you might also find something which is not only related to IT or cybersecurity, but it's more general. But when we talk about this, are we maybe trying to fix the broken glass? We don't know, maybe. So what we use in this lecture, different sources, most of them you will have it uploaded on Blackboard. I mean, except maybe the first one, which you are not required to read, so it's just a source to understand where the part about organizations came from. So next we will have the test and some assignments, and then next week the lecture on risk analysis and management. It might be also related to a guest lecture that will be held next Friday in Trondheim. We'll try to have a connection with them, so it maybe will work like that. And then next week the lab will be about the tool that we kind of mentioned shortly last week, and maybe some more assignments. Any questions?
Question. The guest lecture. When is this?
Okay. So next week the plan is that we will have a usual lecture here, as always, about risk management, risk analysis, and then, if everything goes okay, there will be a planned lecture in Trondheim to the other students that are part of this program in Trondheim. And if we are able to connect it, if we are able to register it, you will also be able to watch it or to hear it. Maybe not on Friday, maybe in the other days.
Okay.
We will try to make it, I mean, you know, streaming and everything. I'm not sure now if they are able to do it. But yeah. So you will have a typical lecture here, as it is now. And then something else, maybe, from that guest lecture. Yeah. Other questions? Okay, so we will have a short break, and we will just start with the lab, okay? So. Is it okay to have a 5 minute break? Or 10, maximum 10, do you want more? Yeah, okay, I will.